The first step in mastering synchro destiny may be the most challenging one. You must learn to question assumptions that over time have become very familiar and comfortable for you. And you must also embrace the fact that you have the power to replace those assumptions with something radically different. In this session, I'll ask you to open your mind and heart to some new and exciting possibilities. I'll show you how synchronicity can be much more than just a collection of interesting events. In fact, synchronicity and synchrodestiny are the keys to spiritual transformation. And I believe spiritual transformation is nothing less than the true purpose of our lives as human beings. Most of us have become very comfortable with the idea that things happen in a certain mechanical way, that the universe operates like a machine that generates random data, and that our intentions and awareness play no part in this. The existence of synchronicity causes us to question this conventional viewpoint. The rewards can be enormous in every way, but there can be a certain amount of resistance at the beginning. Some very remarkable coincidence may occur, but we dismiss it. Partly we do this because we really believe it deserves to be dismissed, and partly it's because we just don't have the intellectual software to understand it in any other way. Also, we may be unprepared to embrace the vast new possibilities that synchronicity opens up. The notion that meaningful coincidence is unimportant is the first idea that I want to dispel. I believe these occurrences are very important, and I'll be discussing why they're important as we proceed through this program. There's also a second erroneous notion attached to coincidence, and it may be even further from the truth than the idea that coincidences are insignificant. The second mistaken notion is that meaningful coincidences are rare, that they're anomalies, that they're out of step with nature. In fact, the very opposite is true. Meaningful coincidence is everywhere in nature. It's the norm. It's the foundation. If we don't see it, it's not because it isn't there. It's just that our eyes haven't opened to it. Once you become aware of the pervasiveness of coincidence in your own life and the world around you, you will wonder how you could ever have been blind to it. In fact, every coincidence is meaningful. The very fact that coincidence breaks the bounds of statistical probability, it makes it meaningful. For example, you as an individual and the human race as a species are the products of incredible so-called meaningful coincidences. Think about this. If events at the dawn of creation hadn't unfolded synchronistically, you would not be here, and humanity would not be here, and life itself would not be here. If there had been a deviation of even 1/1,000,000th of a second at the time of the Big Bang, when the universe was born, everything would have been very, very different. In fact, everything might not have been anything at all. An incredible symphony of synchronicity took place in those first few moments of the universe, with literally countless numbers of things happening at once. This is actually the root of the word synchronicity. In Greek, it simply means at the same time. When things are synchronized, they happen with exact coincidence. When we encounter a coincidence in our lives, we are struck by how unusual it is and how the laws of probability are very much against it. But the most powerful computer in the world could hardly begin to calculate the coincidences that have brought about the universe that we inhabit today. But that's not all. The world's most powerful computer couldn't even calculate the coincidences that happen in your own body. As in the macrocosm, so in the microcosm. Just as the universe was born in incredible coincidence, you as an individual are also a product of coincidence on a scale that can hardly be imagined. You are who you are because an egg was fertilized by a single sperm to the exclusion of hundreds of millions of others. Who can say what had to happen in order for that one sperm to win the lottery? How close did it come to not winning? how many micromillimeters or nanomillimeters or nanomicromillimeters away were you from being somebody entirely different? How many milliseconds? In the development of a human embryo, the same level of incredible coincidence continues to operate. In the formation of a human eye, hundreds of thousands of nerve endings must precisely and coincidentally connect, and they do. That's why you can see. Now here is a very important point. Let me use the development of the human eye as an example. When I describe that development as a synchronicity, I often encounter a kind of objection. Very often someone will say the development of the eye is not really a synchronicity. There is an intention at work, an intention on the part of nature to create a human being. A coincidence is something that seemingly happens at random, but the connection of the nerve endings in the eye happens in order to fulfill a purpose. It's true that hundreds of thousands of things are taking place at once, but this isn't pure chance. It's the fulfillment of a program encoded in the DNA of the embryo. At least that's how the objection goes. As a matter of fact, I completely agree with this as an analysis of what happens in the embryo. As complex as the development may be, there is a guiding intention behind it. I also believe that there is a guiding intention behind what happens in our lives, even after we are out of the embryo stage and are looking for jobs and falling in love and having children. Think about what it was like before the discovery of DNA and all the other breakthroughs in cell biology. People would look at the incredibly complex development of the human body and they'd say, "It's so amazing. It really seems like there must be some plan guiding this, but we don't know what it is." Then DNA was discovered and people can say, "Now we understand the plan." But they still manage to look at all the other fantastic synchronicities that are happening all the time and they say, "Well, those are just coincidences. There's no DNA behind those coincidences. There's no intention. It's all just a chance." But the real reason they say that is because they don't know how to understand it in any other way. I believe that there is an intelligence and an intention behind all of nature and behind all the events of our lives. That intelligence and intention uses the vehicle of DNA to manifest itself in the development of the embryo. That same intelligence uses other means to manifest itself in other areas of human experience. One of the most interesting of these other means is synchronicity. Synchrodestiny includes the idea that you can play an active role in the plan. We speak of people taking control of their own destiny. Well, you can also take control of your own synchrodestiny. That's the power this program will give you. So far, we've made several important points about the phenomenon of meaningful coincidence. First, we've stated that this phenomenon is highly significant. Although many people dismiss the importance of coincidence in their lives, I believe this is because they lack the tools to think about it in any other way. For thousands of years of human history, striking coincidences were taken very seriously. They were seen as omens or messages from the gods. They were carefully interpreted, and profound meanings were derived from them. In my opinion, the fact that we now regard coincidence as insignificant does not mean that our society is intellectually superior. It simply means that we have embraced one way of looking at the world to the exclusion of all others. Our second point about coincidence is that it is not rare. It is not unusual. It is not an anomaly amid the workings of the world. On the contrary, the entire universe is built on an almost infinite number of incredible improbabilities. And perhaps the greatest of these improbabilities is our own existence as human beings. A third point is that meaningful coincidence has a direction. It is a process of manifestation, of unfolding, just as the development of a human embryo is the unfolding of a genetic destiny encoded in the DNA. The word synchrodestiny expresses awareness of a developing pattern in the events of our lives. Of course, synchrodestiny is also more than just awareness. Awareness is not an end in itself. Synchrodestiny also means understanding and participating in the process of meaningful coincidence. It means lending your attention and intention in order to bring the process to fruition. When this happens, the result is a phrase that I've used many times in my books and lectures, the spontaneous fulfillment of desire in the field of infinite possibilities. Let me explain exactly what this phrase means. Earlier we spoke about a person who experienced a moment of synchronicity at a baseball game. Because he chose to dismiss it as just a coincidence, it came to nothing more than that. It was synchronicity, not synchrodestiny. It came and it went. Of course, there were other ways he could have responded. Right now, I want to discuss the different categories of response that are open to you when you encounter a moment of meaningful coincidence. This will illuminate what I mean by the spontaneous fulfillment of desire in the field of infinite possibilities. Suppose you suddenly encounter a synchronistic moment. Suppose you're in front of a bookshelf at home and for some reason you're thinking about how you'd like to have a bit more spending money. And right at that moment, you take a book you had bought 5 years ago from a used bookstore and had never opened it. And suddenly, $100 bill falls out. This actually happened to a friend of mine. What kinds of responses are open to you at a moment like that? At one extreme, you can always say, it's just a coincidence. Means nothing. It's amusing but insignificant. You've got another $100 to spend and that's all. On the other extreme, you might think this is the most fantastic thing that's ever happened. This is going to change everything. Maybe you think, all I have to do is want something and it'll appear. I'm going to the racetrack. I'm going to Las Vegas. Of course, it doesn't really work that way. Synchrodestiny is not about waving a magic wand to gratify ego-based wants. It's about doing something very different. The fulfillment of intentions that exist at much deeper levels and of desires that are based in spirit rather than ego. Suppose you see a rose growing and you want that rose. It will look really great in the hair of your beloved girlfriend. Should you pull the rose off the bush? If you do, that's just an ego-based action. It's obviously not synchrodestiny. But what if you look at the rose and at that very moment it falls off the bush? Well, if that kindles the kind of ego greed in you, that's not synchrodestiny either. If you suddenly think you've become the master of the universe, that's not what would be called a positive transformation. But let's say you're admiring the rose and you hold your hand under it and just then it falls down into your hand and you think something wonderful and beautiful just happened. It seemed to be a kind of flowing together of what is in me and what is in the rose bush. It was unforced, but there was an intention present in me, and I'd like to know more about how this happened and what it means. I'd like to bring more of these moments in my life. I'd like to see where they lead me. I'd like to learn what they have to teach me. This is the frame of mind and spirit that fosters synchrodestiny. This is setting the stage for the spontaneous fulfillment of desire. Most people would call this a very spiritual point of view, but it's actually closely related to the insights of modern physics. In fact, making a sharp distinction between modern science and spirituality is very mistaken. Both points of view are interested in discovering the unity that underlies the apparent disconnections that surround us. Spirituality is based on the idea that there's more to life than meets the eye. But modern science is also based on this. In the 20th century, science has taught us that a material world that seems solid and tangible is actually made up mostly of empty space and pure energy. Physics tells us that this energy exists in four different forms. If you understand these four kinds of energy, you can explain anything that happens in the material universe. From the way your car runs to the way subatomic particles react during a nuclear explosion. There is the so-called strong force, which binds subatomic particles together to form the nucleus of an atom. And there is the so-called weak force, which is the energy of radioactive decay, and which can bring about the transmutation of one element into another. There is the force of gravity, which is the attraction that exists between all forms of matter. In thinking about gravity, we can begin to see the unifying direction that science has begun to impose on concepts that once seemed separate and distinct. For example, before Isaac Newton's work in the 17th century, no one realized that the movements of planets and other celestial bodies were governed by the same gravitational force that causes an apple to fall down from a tree. So gravity makes the world go around, and it causes the tides, and it also prevents each of us from floating off into the atmosphere. It's the same force acting on a macro scale and a micro scale at the same time. The fourth and last force is electromagnetism. Electromagnetism deals with the energy of charge. It is the strongest of the four forces, much stronger than gravity. Electric force is responsible for most of the physical and chemical properties of atoms and molecules. Throughout the history of science, electricity and magnetism were thought to be separate forces. In the 19th century, the Scottish physicist William Maxwell proposed that electricity and magnetism were aspects of the same force. But it was only in 1905, when Einstein published his special theory of relativity, that the unity of electricity and magnetism was established beyond doubt. So those are the four categories of energy that animate the universe. They govern what goes on in your body, just as they govern the galaxies hundreds of thousands of light years away. With the exception of gravity, you don't directly feel those forces, but they are certainly present. You don't perceive the force that holds the atoms of your body together. But if it weren't there, you would instantly disperse into nothingness. For at least the last 70 or 80 years, scientists have been suggesting that these four forces are actually the same force in different manifestations. In other words, there's only one force. A mathematical proof of this is almost 99% complete. It's almost completely proven, although there are still some questions that remain to be answered. In any case, that single encompassing force is usually referred to as the unified field. So if they are unified, if the four forces are really one, we don't need to understand all of them separately. We can just look at one of them. Let's take electromagnetism. Electromagnetism is really the energy of light, and that's what we all are, light. We are made of light. Plants are made of light through the process of photosynthesis, and animals eat plants, so they're also light, and so forth. This is the process of photosynthesis. As in the Bible, when God says, "Let there be light," it's really interesting that the word enlightenment means to become one with the light. And it also means to lighten up. Our physical bodies are really material expressions of light, and so is everything else. So is gravity, so are strong and weak forces. Our bodies are both receivers and transmitters of the light energy that is all around us at every moment, and that permeates the whole cosmos. And all this happens completely outside our conscious awareness or our perception. There are a great many other aspects of the physical world that you don't perceive, but they're all around you nonetheless. Until you turn on a radio, you don't perceive the radio waves, which are also, by the way, a form of light that can be transformed into classical music or the broadcast of a baseball game. It's amazing to realize that the empty space that we're in has more activity than anything that's solid. If you could eavesdrop on even a single little pinpoint of space, such as between your index finger and your thumb, you'd see that the whole energy and information of the universe is present in that space. Every radio and television broadcast is happening there. CNN News is right between your thumb and your finger. There are millions of cellular phone conversations in that space as well. all this information and all this energy, and yet it does not interfere with any other bit of information or energy that exists in the universe. Radio messages from intergalactic space probes, it's all there, but there's no interference because everything is vibrating in different frequency domains. In a similar way, you only see light within the boundaries of certain wavelengths. You don't see ultraviolet on one end of the spectrum, and you don't see infrared light on the other. Conversely, you do see color because you have learned to see it. Color is not a property of light waves. Color is a sensation in the human brain. When a certain wavelength of light stimulates your brain in a specific manner, you see the color red. But the color red, as it exists in the human sensory apparatus, is not out there in anything like the same way. We say that a cape waved in front of a bull is red, but it is only red because we have learned to create red in ourselves. In other words, we perceive certain phenomena, like the color red, because we have learned to perceive them, and we don't perceive other phenomena, like ultraviolet or high frequency sound, because presumably they are outside the range of our perceptions. But I want to suggest that we can expand the range of our perceptions, both those of the mind and those of the body. For example, Maxwell expanded the range of his intellectual perceptions when he recognized the unity of electricity and magnetism. At first he saw two separate things, but then he created a connection. There was a growth in his perceptions, and instead of seeing two separate things, he saw a unity. In the same way, there was a moment before Newton realized that the attraction between the Earth and the Moon was the same as the attraction between an apple and the Earth. Then there was the transforming moment when he recognized that where there had seemed to be a separation, there was actually a unity. And after that moment, the way Newton saw the world was very different from the way he'd seen it before. That's such an important inner transformation, moving from a fragmented view of things to a unified view. Einstein said that nothing can travel faster than light. If I want to move something from me to you, there's no way that transfer can take place at a speed faster than the speed of light. That was Einstein's belief. But since Einstein, other scientists have shown that between certain connected events in the universe, there is no time lag at all. Two things can happen at exactly the same moment. Information is exchanged simultaneously, or happened simultaneously. For example, if two electrons originate in the same space-time event, but they're at opposite ends of the universe, and one of them spins in exactly a certain direction, its twin will do exactly the same thing at exactly the same instant. When Einstein heard this, he said, "I don't understand this, because theoretically nothing can happen faster than the speed of light." So, over the years, this has been a scientific controversy. But physicists are coming to believe that there are two kinds of processes in the universe. One in which there's transmission of information from one place to another in a linear way, and another in which there's no transmission over time, no matter how short that time might be. As soon as it happens in one place, it's also happening in another. These scientific debates may seem abstract, but actually they have great bearing on what happens in your physical body and even in your thoughts. Let's say you have a simple idea like, "I want water." You're feeling thirsty and you need to drink water. Your brain makes a chemical called angiotensin, which immediately makes you look for water. Your hypothalamus, which is another part of your brain, also makes angiotensin. Your kidneys make it so you won't lose it in your urine. Your lungs make it so you won't lose water through your respiration. Your skin makes it so you won't lose water through perspiration. So as soon as you have the idea you want water, it instantly starts happening in every cell of your body as a material expression. And it all happens everywhere all at once, synchronistically, coincidentally. It's not like a message goes from here to there in a linear way. It's all at the same time. It's a global response. at the same incident synchronistically. What is the connection between our minds and the unifying fabric of the universe? Most importantly, our minds and our thoughts are not separate from everything else. Thought is not separate. There are just those four forces, or that one force, and thought is encompassed by it. So the separation between the physical universe out there and what's happening inside your head, in your own consciousness, is an artificial separation. It's totally artificial. We are part of the electromagnetic field, and if we have thoughts, they must also be part of that same field. My favorite poet, Rumi, almost 700 years ago, said this most eloquently in a beautiful poem. This is what he said. He said, "I have lived on the lip of insanity, wanting to know reasons, knocking at the door. The door finally opens. I've been knocking from the inside." So we are insiders in the scheme of nature. We are insiders in the web of the cosmos. We may have been taught that our minds exist only inside of our heads, but in reality, our minds, our thoughts unite us with the universe, because they are contained in the universe in the same way that our breathing exchanges atoms between our bodies and the atmosphere. When you understand that, it will be the same kind of moment that Isaac Newton experienced when he saw that gravity moved the planets and an apple falling to the ground at the same time. It is a moment in which you see unity instead of fragmentation. It's a transforming moment. I want this program to help you create that kind of moment many times over. I want you to see connections where previously you saw only unrelated fragments. I want you to be able to use those connections to transform your life for the better, just as the insights of the great scientists have transformed the world. This will certainly be a process of spiritual growth, but I would not describe it as necessarily mystical or even mysterious. It's simply a process of opening yourself to the truth. In this session, we've spoken about the laws and the forces that control the universe. We've also spoken about the relationship of those laws to the workings of our own bodies and even of our thoughts. Let me emphasize that my purpose in this early part of the program is to open your mind to new ways of looking at things, to start raising possibilities that will be taken up in later sessions, and to show you that these ideas, which may be new to you, have been important not only to philosophers and spiritual thinkers, but to great scientists as well. There's a very influential theory in contemporary physics that attempts to understand the universe through the model of a hologram. One of the key characteristics of a hologram is that all of it is contained in every part. That's why it's called a hologram. The whole is contained in every part. You can shatter a hologram into 100 pieces, but if you look at any one piece, you'll still see the complete image. Memory is recorded holographically in our bodies, which means that every cell of our bodies has recorded all the experiences of our lives. Memory, then, is not just in the mind. The body also has memories. All your memories are in all the cells of your body, not only the brain cells. And that's only our personal memories. But there's also a realm of experience that goes beyond this lifetime to memories from previous karma. Our physical body is literally an incarnation of memories. You can see this in the fact that right now your physical body is entirely different from the body you had 20 years ago. Right now, there's not even a single molecule in your body that was present at that time. But let's say that 20 years ago you learned how to ride a bike. Well, you still know how to ride one. The memory of riding the bike has constantly been incarnating in your cells. The memory has an existence beyond the physical realm. The memory outlived the death of the molecules through which it first expressed itself. But how does the body remember how to ride a bike if every cell in this body is different, if every atom of this body is different, it incarnates in the body at some level beyond the material. And Vedic tradition says it also outlives a single lifespan. It continues to evolve. Even in the West, there's a growing body of research on children who have memories of previous lifetimes. And so, as you go deeper into the hologram of human consciousness, you discover that there are not only memories of our lifetimes, but even of our species. There are memories of other species. Scientists talk about reptilian memories, amphibian memories. And if you look at the development of a human fetus, you can see how it literally recapitulates the whole evolutionary sequence. At one point it looks like a fish, and then a tadpole, and a frog, and on and on. I believe even now we are continuing that evolution into something that's currently part of our imagination. But the imagination is only the precursor of that reality. The Persian poet Rumi has a great verse about this, in which he wrote, "When I die, I shall soar with angels. And when I die as an angel, what I shall become, you cannot imagine." You see, to imagine what he will become, you first have to be an angel in order to imagine the next stage. What you can imagine is simply a reflection of the memory thus far. As we continue to evolve and as we have more experiences, then the limits of our imagination expand, and from there new realities are born. According to the theory of the holographic universe, each of us has the memory of all that's come before. But each of us has this memory from a different perspective based on our individual karma. In the hymns of the sacred text known as the Rig Veda, there's a passage that speaks of the god Indra. The passage says, "And Indra's heaven is a state of consciousness. In Indra's heaven, there's a string of pearls so constituted that if you saw one of them, you'd see all of them." That's a holographic description of the universe. William Blake expressed the same idea when he wrote, "To see a world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wildflower, to hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. As is the atom, so is the universe. As is the microcosm, so is the macrocosm." That idea has been expressed poetically and metaphorically many, many times by great thinkers over the centuries. And now, it's beginning to be expressed in the language of science itself. So now in our own lives, we want to start to witness the holographic template, where in every bit we can see everything else. In every moment of our lives, we can see our karmic inheritance. And in every moment of our lives, we have the opportunity to fulfill our karmic destiny. That's the real purpose of this program, to help you use synchronicity to further the evolution and transformation, which is the true intention of the universe. I've been using the Sanskrit word karma, and this word is very often misunderstood. Let's not make karma complicated. Just understand it as past experience. As a result of past experience, we are vibrating at a certain frequency. The British scientist Rupert Sheldrake talks about how vibration sets up morphogenetic fields. Morpho means form, genesis means giving rise to form. So morphogenesis is literally the mechanics of creation. According to Dr. Rupert Sheldrake and other scientists, the universe is a continuum of morphogenetic fields which create resonance. And if anything is vibrating at the same frequency, it is invited into that resonant field. It's as if you had a tuning fork that vibrates at, let's say, 240 cycles per second. As soon as this fork begins to vibrate, any other tuning fork that has the same resonant quality will also start to vibrate. I hope you're beginning to see how this relates to our topic of meaningful coincidence. What seems at first glance to be an unexplainable synchronicity can be understood in terms of one frequency of vibration. you, for example, attracting another person who's tuned on the same frequency. There's a karmic affinity, and by nurturing that affinity, you can create both inner transformation and the spontaneous manifestation of desire on the material level. I once saw something quite extraordinary happen at a jazz concert. One of the musicians was playing a saxophone, and when he hit a certain note, the saxophone suddenly began broadcasting radio messages from a passing police car. For a second, the musician was scared out of his wits. He dropped the saxophone, but fortunately it was attached to a lanyard around his neck. What had happened was this. The musician had suddenly done something that tuned him into an information and energy frequency and a reality that was always there, but that had been outside his range of perception. As you proceed with this program, you learn to do something very similar. You learn to see and hear and feel energies that are now going right past you. Most important of all, you learn to use those energies to benefit every area of your life.